you're actually safer and better off without pursuing nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons. It's not hard to give them up.
The U.S. National Security Advisor talks North Korea with VOA. It's Monday, May 14th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China tackles corruption again. Japan may have a wealth of rare earth minerals. Indian women learn management skills. Anti-aging breakthroughs. Refugee inventions. It's all on today's VOA Asia. National Security Advisor John Bolton said on Friday that complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of North Korea is what is needed to bring peace to the Korean Peninsula. In a wide-ranging interview with VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren, former U.S. Ambassador to the UN Bolton said he does not expect a lengthy negotiation with Kim and that North Korea is coming to the table now because Pyongyang has never seen the level of economic and political pressure that's been put on them by U.S. President Donald Trump's campaign. We hear an excerpt from the interview.
What's the hint that North Korea actually wants to deal?
Well, the fact that they've most recently, again, in the what's called the Panmunjom Declaration, the document that came out of the North-South Korean summit at the end of April, commits North Korea to complete denuclearization. And that means that if they're serious, if they've made a strategic decision to give up nuclear weapons, they've got a chance to demonstrate it to President Trump directly in Singapore on June the 12th. And if they haven't made that strategic decision, I don't think he's going to be misled.
What would be the motive to say it and not do it?
Well, look, it's possible. I hope this is not true, but it's possible. They think in North Korea they can do the same thing to us they've done to three previous administrations and negotiate, buy time, get resources in exchange for commitments they don't intend to live up to. I think they're going to find they've got a different president here, somebody who knows how to make a deal and enforce it, and we'll see what happens.
One of the things that's been pointed out is that North Korea's made an announcement they're going to freeze their testing. There are also reports that where they did their testing last September, that mountain that has collapsed, and it could be an ecological disaster. The whole area could be contaminated. Do you have any information as to whether they announced they're freezing their testing because they're doing it as part of good faith gesture to the United States and to the discussions, or is it because they got trouble?
Look, it's possible it's part of a good faith gesture. It's entirely possible that's what they're doing. It's also possible, as we've seen in cases like Iran or North Korea itself, they've run into difficulties, so they're making a virtue out of necessity. I hope it's the former, but one of the reasons that the short period of time between the agreement to meet between the two leaders and the actual meeting is important is North Korea is not going to get a lot of benefit here out of a lengthy negotiation. This is going to be very quick. I think the two sides will size each other up, and President Trump will have a chance to look Kim in the eye and decide whether he really is serious.
Is the serious on the June 12th, is it going to be, are you willing to give up the nuclear weapons totals? That's going to be the questions put on the table.
Yeah, look, denuclearization has a history here. In 1992, the North Koreans agreed not only to give up nuclear weapons, but to give up the front end, uranium enrichment, and the back end, plutonium reprocessing.
But why are they selling? This is what I don't understand, is that not only are they making the announcement, at least we're reading about it, that they're willing to denuclearize and that they've frozen their testing, but they also returned three Americans, and they haven't sort of asked for any quid pro quo. You know, what's your thinking about what's going on in their mind?
Look, if you believe after evaluation that you're actually safer and better off without pursuing nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons, it's not hard to give them up because you're getting to a better place. You're getting to real security rather than the false security of a weapons program.
You may say VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren's interview with National Security Advisor John Bolton at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. 13 killed in Indonesia church bombings. Shock as 4 children killed in Australia mass shooting. Pakistan's diplomatic dispute with U.S. intensifies. China protests fighting along Myanmar border. Australia steps up effort to save vulnerable koalas. expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Last week, a Chinese court sentenced former high-ranking Communist Party official Sun Junsai to life in prison for corruption. Sun, the latest victim of a years-long anti-corruption drive by President Xi Jinping, admitted last month to a court of taking bribes of more than $27 million. He expressed repentance and said he would not appeal. The 54-year-old Sun was removed from his post as party chief of the city of Chongqing last July. He was one of the youngest of 25 members of the country's decision-making Politburo and a top contender for a leadership role. Prosecutors said his guilt extended back 15 years as Minister of Agriculture. Jean-Pierre Cabestan, a professor of government and international relations at Hong Kong Baptist University, tells VOA's Victor Bidi Sun was elevated to leader of Chongqing in 2012, just after the 18th Party Congress and as Xi Jinping took over the presidency.
He was sort of groomed and promoted by former leaders of the Politburo, like Wen Jiabao, the former prime minister, and Jia Qingli, another heavyweight before 2012. And he was one of the two members of the Politburo, which, you know, belonged to the sixth generation. You mentioned he's 54 years old. Well, he could have succeeded to either Xi Jinping or Prime Minister Li Keqiang by 2022, but now he's out of the race. Now, the reasons behind his fall are multiple. I think there's a clear case for corruption. But there are a lot of ironies because he was promoted after the 18th Party Congress and with Xi Jinping's approval to Chongqing. If the party wanted to know more about him, it could know more about what Su Zhongzai did in CTD in Beijing. I think at the time it was protected by high-level leaders. So it gives you an idea of, you know, how corruption cases are made and why they are made.
Is this case and all of these cases really about graft, or is it more about Xi Jinping putting people he wants in power?
I think it's more the latter, I would say. I mean, the Su Zhongzai case is a very political case. Again, I think the party could have screened his candidacy when he was promoted to the Politburo, but he was with Hu Chunhua, the other guy who has remained in the Politburo, one of the two members of the sixth generation of the party, and that was the idea. It was to sort of perpetuate a new pattern of succession, which was to, you know, to groom leaders and then give them a chance to become top leaders 10 years later. There is another accusation which has not been mentioned by the court, the accusation which was published in October last year by the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong, according to which Su Zhongzai was accused of vote rigging within the party Central Committee. He's not the only one accused of vote rigging. Deposed leaders, the security czar, Zhou Yongkang or Lin Jihua, was a very close aide to Hu Jintao, his chief of staff, actually, were also accused of vote rigging at the time. And that's why at the 90s Party Congress, Xi Jinping decided to stop establishing a list of candidates submitted for the Politburo positions and standing committee of the Politburo position. Clearly, there's a political dimension here which has been sort of somewhat overlooked by the court, but on purpose. I think Xi Jinping wants to portray that case as a clear corruption case, which I think was not. It's more a political battle between the supporter of Xi Jinping and the supporter of former Party General Secretary Hu Jintao or former Premier Wen Jiabao. That's how party leaders settle the account and solve their disputes.
Jean-Pierre Cabestan said while there have been a number of high-profile corruption cases adjudicated in China's courts, most of the thousands are being investigated and do not reach that level. He said for the most part, party members caught up in the anti-graft drive are disciplined. Happening now in Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says If North Korea agrees to full denuclearization, the United States is prepared to provide security assurances for Pyongyang's government and allow private American investments to build out the country's woefully inadequate electrical grid. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Monday morning. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. A tiny island located almost 2,000 kilometers southeast of Tokyo holds enough terbium, yttrium, europium, and dysprosium to satisfy world demand for hundreds of years. That's the gist of a recent study in which Japanese researchers claim the mud on the seabed near the island belonging to Japan could very well contain a near infinite source of certain rare earth elements. Rare earths are elements with unique and often desirable properties. Companies that use rare earths in their products began looking at alternative materials after China, the world's largest producer by a wide margin, introduced export quotas in 2012. However, not every expert believes the expectations, and some say the headlines surrounding the release are overstated. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about it with Alex King, the director of the Critical Materials Institute at the U.S.-run Ames Laboratory in Ames, Iowa.
It's an interesting find. It's not actually new news in some sense. The discovery was announced some years ago, well, 2011, the initial discovery of rare earths on the ocean floor near this island, Minami Torishima. What happened a few weeks ago is an update of the report in a highly prestigious scientific journal called Scientific Reports. So it's kind of exciting, but there's also some interest in what is not said in all the reports. What is there is, you know, that there's a lot of rare earth down there, could meet all of our needs, all of the world's needs for some of the rare earths for hundreds of years in some cases. What you have to sort of read in between the lines is the things that are not said. The biggest use of any single rare earth is probably for neodymium, which is used, it's the bulk of the rare earths used in magnets. And that is one of the elements that's not found there at the bottom of the ocean near Minami Torishima. The place we really need neodymium is anything that relates to magnets, particularly high-power magnets, high-efficiency magnetically based devices like motors and generators, the earbuds in your, attached to your smartphone, or in fact the speakers in your smartphone, the microphone in your smartphone, and wind turbines, which are very large.
Does this make this island as commercially viable as it seems to be in the initial reports that I read?
I think it has great commercial viability. I don't think it does all the other things that are being suggested, including the claim that it will, I think in one publication I read, it said it will break the Chinese hegemony over minerals. I don't think so, because China has the advantage of having a mine that's been in operation a long time, and for which the cost of operation has been carefully minimized over that time.
Alex King, the director of the Critical Materials Institute at the U.S.-run Ames Laboratory in Ames, Iowa, he was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Coming up, Indian women get management training. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
news from VOA Asia, Pakistan's decision not to allow a U.S. diplomat from leaving the country for his role in a fatal road accident has fueled tensions between the two countries. Immigration authorities would not permit U.S. Defense Attaché Joseph Emmanuel Hall to board an American military aircraft because of the pending criminal case. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, there's a push to level the playing field for women in India, a country where women account for 42% of new university graduates, but where only 24% are hired as entry-level professionals. Of these, only 19% are likely to achieve senior-level management positions. To make matters worse, the number of women who eventually leave the workforce is also higher than men. As Rital Joshi reports, a specially designed management course for women in New Delhi is teaching them to make their way in a male-dominated workforce.
Young women are not just taking a management training course. They are learning the skills needed to become senior-level managers, a category dominated by men.
Possibly women don't work.
Helping them is New Delhi's Vedika Scholars Program for Women. Launched in 2015, the program is designed to address the needs and challenges of women professionals.
The attributes which are traditionally considered to be women's strengths, like empathy, collaborative work, are not given due importance right now. There are a lot of modules in our program which help women discover their strengths.
In their daily lives, they're anyway interacting with men. It's just that in the classroom, they're isolated from that, and now thinking through, you know, what does that interaction mean to their lives?
Women very cleverly took that article.
The 18-month program familiarizes students with the principles of management from a woman's perspective. Liberal arts and gender studies are an important part of the curriculum.
Rehen-sehen, livelihoods, resources.
A woman's life, her livelihood, lifestyle, even the violence she faces, she carries it all with her when she enters the workforce. If you can't find a solution to these issues, then it doesn't mean much, even if you are earning well.
They just sensitize you more to, you know, what your lineage has been as a woman. And when you go into the workforce, it becomes your responsibility to educate people.
Liberal arts broaden your thinking. What follows is that you stop looking at problems only from a business angle. This really changes the way you approach a problem.
Instead of a regular internship, the course offers a unique hands-on approach. The Shadow a CEO program gives students an opportunity to work with a woman chief executive officer for a month, a concept that was borrowed from the Emerging Women Leaders program, jointly run by the U.S. State Department and Fortune magazine.
When I attended that program, it completely changed my views on the challenges faced by women, what would help them, and what are some of the things you should know.
A World Bank report says women entrepreneurs tend to generate more work opportunities for other women. So courses like these can be an effective step towards creating more women entrepreneurs in India. Rital Joshi for VOA News, New Delhi, India.
This news from VOA Asia. China on Sunday condemned fighting in Myanmar between Myanmar government troops and ethnic militants near the Chinese border that caused people to flee into Chinese territory. The Myanmar government said ethnic insurgents in Myanmar killed 19 people, including four members of the security forces. This and other stories are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Spanish explorer Ponce de Leon never found the Fountain of Youth, a magical water source supposedly capable of reversing the aging process. But scientists at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, are working to extend human lifespan and delay the onset of multiple age-related diseases and disabilities, as we hear from VOA's Maya Kay.
Old age typically brings with it health problems, chronic diseases, frailty, and loss of independence. As the world population ages, the aging process poses a challenge for healthcare systems in many countries, according to Tamara Chonia, one of the lead scientists at Mayo Clinic's Robert and Arlene Cogott Center on Aging.
In the United States, for instance, 80% of healthcare cost is
basically related to age-related diseases. And aging is the highest risk factor of a lot of diseases and comorbidities.
But Mayo Clinic scientists believe it may be possible to delay age-related diseases by modulating fundamental aging mechanisms.
So the view in the aging field is, why not go for a root cause, which is fundamental aging processes themselves, to try to delay these, the onset of these disorders as a group, and to increase what we call health span, the period during life when people are independent, free of pain, free of disability, and enjoy life. How do we add life to years, not necessarily years to life?
It was at Mayo Center on Aging where senolytic drugs were discovered, agents that selectively eliminate senescent cells that are responsible for aging processes without damaging healthy ones. Basically, these drugs have a potential to slow aging by killing bad cells which accumulate with aging and cause a range of age and disease-related problems. Human studies are next. Senolytic drugs will be given to people with illnesses directly related to the aging process.
We're finding that different combinations of these drugs are effective in different situations. So there's a lot of work to be done in figuring out what the right combinations of these drugs will be for particular human conditions.
If senolytic drugs manage to reduce the health impact of aging and have minimal side effects, then scientists plan to gradually move from treating the consequences of aging to preventing it altogether.
But there is a hope maybe we can get positive results. And if it's true, it might revolutionize medicine.
Until then, several additional studies need to be done to determine the safety and efficacy of these drugs. Maya Kay for VOA News, Rochester, Minnesota.
No matter where they live, young people are capable of coming up with fresh ideas about how to improve life in their communities. At a recently held exhibition in the sprawling Zaatari refugee camp in northern Jordan, teenage Syrians showcased inventions geared toward making refugee camps more livable. VOA's George Pudich shares their ideas.
Life in a refugee camp is hard, with all kinds of shortages, from food and water to energy and transport. Humanitarian organizations do what they can, but resources are often limited. UNICEF partnered with the One Foundation, organizes workshops to teach young people various skills and to promote entrepreneurship. UNICEF innovation specialist Robin Louis says they encourage students to look around, identify problems, come up with solutions, and maybe turn them into marketable products.
So, for example, they go into the community and they say, well, there's not enough lighting. They come back to the lab, work with the facilitators, build the light, go back to the community, test the light with the community. They'll give them feedback and then improve it.
That is how 15-year-old refugee Dina Askar designed a simple and affordable battery lamp.
There is no electricity between 5 p.m. until 3 a.m., but students need light to study, and with many newborns, mothers need light to take care of their babies. The costs of this invention are very cheap.
Sawan Harb, who uses a wheelchair, redesigned a two-wheeled electric bike to improve his mobility. He shared the challenges of his project with visitors.
I asked for help from someone who works in blacksmithing, and I explained to him the new design with three wheels to be able to climb on it from a wheelchair.
UNICEF representative Robert Jenkins says this is just the start of a process they hope to expand to other refugee camps in Jordan.
We think it has enormous potential to scale up, and absolutely we are in need of additional funding in order to realize its full potential, which would be scaling up across the kingdom. So youth in all communities would have an opportunity to go through this process and in the end realize their innovative ideas.
For the less tech-savvy in the camp, workshops also covered sewing and decorative crafts. George Putich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand is one of many radio stations you can hear our program on throughout Asia. We thank everyone there who is listening today, and we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. Our director for today's program is Tracy Carter, engineer Zeynep Abdelrahman, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.